talk with George Norrie, call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And you, we'll take your questions this hour with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Don't forget all these websites, novaccines.com, osteomed.com. OSTEOMED.com, linked up with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny's name on coasttocoastam.com. She's got a couple DVDs out called Vaccines, the Risks, Benefits, and Choices, and Vaccines, What CDC and Science Documents Reveal. If you're interested in some holistic rights websites, Dr. Robin Falkov, of course, Sir Richard C. Hoagland's significant other, you can get to her website at healthfreedomrights.com. That's healthfreedomrights.com. She's very concerned that we're going to lose our rights with the ability to really deal with our own health issues. So lots out there for you to peruse. We'll be back in a moment. Sherry, do you think they, whoever they may be, saw issues like terrorism that are out there, that are real, and decided, okay, we're going to take advantage of that, and we're going to magnify it, we're going to profit from it, we're going to do whatever we need to, and so a lot of these issues are out there now based on maybe a real-world event, but they're profiting off it?
Oh, I wouldn't put him past. I wouldn't put them past anything like that, George. Quite frankly, it's about market share. It's about opportunities. You know, the vaccine industry and the pharmaceutical industry is always crying. You know, poor us, vaccines. We don't make any money on them. You know, we've got all this liability,
all this marketing money and research.
But it happens to be an $8 to $10 billion a year industry. I wish I could say, oh, I'm not making any money and I'm making $8 to $10 billion off of one of my products. Now, when you put that in context with the $337.2 billion in annual sales, combined annual sales, I'm sure $8 to $10 billion doesn't sound like very much, but it's still a sizable chunk of change.
What would you do if they came up to you, Sherry, and said, all right, here's a couple $1 million, just butt out of our business?
I don't think I could do that, George.
Wouldn't take it.
I really don't think that I could do that. I mean, I got into this whole thing because it was about the truth. I mean, I'm not vaccine injured. I wasn't even vaccinated as a kid. I don't have any vaccine injured children. I don't have any vaccine injured relatives. I don't have a bone to pick, you know, from a personal perspective about anything. It's just when I did the research and started looking at it, it was like, wow, this is just the truth.
All right.
And somebody needs to be a spokesperson for this.
Let's assume, not you, but there's a politician out there, and then a pharmaceutical company comes to him and goes, hey, we're going to put as much money as we legally can into your financial coffers. What do you think he'd do? Or she?
About anything that they ask him to.
Probably.
Probably. You know, when you asked me that question before.
Whoop.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Oops, sorry. You asked.
Never do that again, Sherry.
Okay. You asked me before about the thing about Bill Frist and how much money he had taken. Well, I happened to just, you know, look it up on one of the things that I had. You know, he's already taken $236,000 from them personally.
And of course, he's got to vote for them. He's got to develop. You can't take the money and not help them.
Exactly.
Wildcard line, let's get us started. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good, sir. Fine.
This is Kevin calling from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
I would blow the horn from you, but I'm sitting in a rest area.
No, you don't want to do that. I trust you. You are who you say you are.
Yes, sir. Sherry, I wanted to ask you, when I was in the military, when I went in the Navy, we had to take a number of vaccinations. And there were warnings posted in the room about poultry byproducts being in the vaccinations. And anybody that was allergic to poultry shouldn't take them. Well, I want to know, how many vaccinations are you aware of that have poultry byproducts, and exactly what kind of side effects are they talking about?
Well, it's sort of like the flu vaccine. The virus is cultured in eggs, so they generally say people that are allergic. Now, I don't know if they were referring to poultry products in terms of eggs, but maybe they were talking about that.
Well, they were talking about eggs, even certain dairy products they were talking about.
I'm not sure about that. I know that, they use avian cultures for I believe it's the chickenpox vaccine. They use bovine serum for the rubella vaccine. I'm not real sure why that would be. I hadn't heard that before, Kevin.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Why do they use the eggs, by the way?
Why do they use them?
Yeah, what do they do?
It's how they make the, they impregnate the eggs with the virus, and then that's how, and the virus uses the proteins that are in the eggs to replicate. And so they put a small little aliquot of viruses into the egg, and then it replicates, and then they get this great big old lot of virus, and then that's from there how they harvest the virus in order to make the vaccine.
Next up, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Your turn. You're on with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Hi there.
Hi, this is Melody from Cottonwood.
Hi there, Melody. That's in Arizona.
Yes, it is.
Okay, go ahead.
I have one question for Sherry and one for you relating to the, I'll ask Sherry first. I am a child of the 50s and had the vaccines given to me in school, and I have known only two people in my life who had polio, both of whom were rather bitter because their parents wouldn't allow them to have the vaccine. Can you explain that?
Which part?
The only people that I ever knew that had polio were people who did not get the vaccine. If you said it doesn't really prevent it, but I don't know anyone else who...
Less than 2% of people who were exposed to the polio virus actually contracted polio that had any level of paralysis. Less than 0.04% of the people who came in contact with the polio virus ended up with what they called bulbar polio, which was the one like the iron lung condition. So more than 98% of people got exposed to the polio virus, it just passed through them, was like a gastrointestinal sort of bug that passed right straight through and went out into their stool, and they didn't even know that they had it. Sort of like when, and then they had lifetime immunity to it. So I don't know why only two people that you came in contact with that didn't have it. I don't know. I was a child of the 50s, and I didn't get the polio vaccine, and I didn't get polio. And I know a lot of people, my classmates and people where I went to school, didn't get the vaccine and didn't get polio. So I can't really explain it from the other perspective.
Well, we all got the vaccine, and they both had parents who were Christian Scientists, and they didn't get it. And well, I know one of them was rather embittered. She felt that she got polio because of her parents' beliefs.
Yeah.
Do you remember if you got the shot or if you got the sugar cube?
Sugar cubes, I believe.
Well, see, the sugar cube was the oral polio vaccine to where you spread that virus on passed it right on through. So it could there could be the possibility there that they contracted it from people who got the vaccine.
What was the vaccine, Sherry, that gave people scars on their arms?
Smallpox.
That's smallpox, okay. And why did it scar like that?
Because in order for you to get the vaccine, they use something called a bifurcated needle that looks like a little, it's like a little pitchfork, kind of. And they had to, like, give you 15 pokes into the arm in order to impregnate that virus into your skin. And then as it would fester, it would turn into a blister, and then after it would heal, it would form a scar.
Okay, next up, first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Where are you calling from, sir?
Bud from Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Hi, Bud. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to ask Sherry if she could say something about staph infections. My wife got a went in for a simple operation and picked it up, and she lived for 2 years, and then it seemed to have killed her last summer. And she was in the mid-60s, diabetic. Could you say it seems to be a big moneymaker, too? Maybe one reason they haven't done more to prevent it. Staph infections.
Did she contract the infection while she was in the hospital?
Yes, she went in for a simple reattachment of the Achilles tendon.
Mm-hmm.
That went well, but then she picked up this, and when it got into her blood, and they said, I found out later, the sepsis, if it gets in your blood, you got about a 50% chance of living at that point.
There's a very, very virulent and very resistant form of staph called methicillin-resistant staph that lives in hospitals.
That sounds something like what they called it.
Yeah, and there's a very high rate of people catching that infection while they're in the hospital. You know, we frequently refer to hospitals as sort of being a cesspool of viruses and bacteria, and there's a lot of what they call nosocomial infections, which by definition means you got the infection while you were in the hospital.
Yes.
So that's a very serious type of infection, and I'm not exactly sure what your question is about that.
Well, she was in the hospital for a month at the end, and
she died from that?
Oh, yes, last summer. And,
oh, dear. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and at the very end, they thought she was going to get over it until about the last week, and then her white blood count just shot exponentially up.
Hmm.
I'm not sure exactly why, but...
Okay, well, thank you. Sorry to hear that, too. Fast blast in from Charlotte in Amherst, Ohio. Wants to know about treating patients with ADHD. Where do you think that comes from?
Amherst, Ohio is fairly close to me in Cleveland. I'm in Cleveland, Ohio, and we do a lot of treating of ADD and ADHD of kids in our practice at Osteomed. We treat them for their food allergies, environmental allergies. Sometimes we feel in some instances it can be a vaccine-related issue that we treat them for that. If she wants to get more information about that, she can go to the osteomed.com website and read all about it.
Okay, next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Carrie. I'm calling from southern Wisconsin.
Hi, Carrie. Go ahead.
Yes, when I was 18 months old, I developed severe allergies like anaphylactic as well as severe dermatitis. In fact, at one point I was hospitalized at Mayo Clinic for 2 weeks, wrapped up like a mummy.
Wow.
I mean, because I had lost more than 40% of the intact skin.
Wow.
That's how bad the dermatitis was. And, you know, I was told that none of my brothers and sisters nor my offspring should ever be vaccinated, you know, with the smallpox.
But this was from a smallpox vaccine?
Smallpox vaccine, and the National Eczema Society lobbied extremely heavily when the debate came open as to whether or not to immunize the public.
Sure.
Because, you know, exposure to a scab could, you know, turn my daughter, who has very, very mild eczema, very mild allergies, into a full bone case like I have. And, you know, anytime you risk anaphylaxis, it could be the only time, you know,
right,
that you have it. And the other thing that I was curious about was the hepatitis B, because it was about a year after I'd finished my hepatitis B series that I developed an early adult onset osteoarthritis. It was at 32 that I was told that one day I'd end up in a wheelchair.
Osteoarthritis?
There's an early onset adult osteoarthritis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, everybody gets it by the time they're, you know, in their early 60s, but that, you know, has advanced and was, you know, I mean, you stay active, you do the best you can, but, you know, it will progress, and, I mean, that was a pretty big blow. And I just, you know, was listening to all the different connections there, and I wasn't sure what all connections were made with the hepatitis B.
Well, the hepatitis B vaccine is known to have autoimmune connections. That is right from the Journal of Autoimmunity, that it talks about the connections with rheumatoid arthritis, insulin-dependent diabetes, and there's a type of vascular disease called Kawasaki's disease, that there have been case reports from that's an autoimmune disease that the hepatitis B vaccine has been directly associated with. I'm kind of surprised with your history of that really severe eczema and almost like a skin exfoliation. It sounds almost like you had like a Steven Johnson syndrome. That was really that you would have gotten any other vaccines at all. I mean that it would have that your immune system would have been sort of sensitized, that you wouldn't want to do anything like that.
Let's go east of the Rockies now. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hello, this is Larry. How you doing, George?
Fine, Larry. Good.
Hey, I got a few things. I'm living in Texas. You have to be vaccinated in Texas or you can't attend schools.
That's not true.
Pardon?
That's not true, but go ahead. Texas is one of the states that has a philosophical exemption.
Well, they don't anymore. The legislature just passed it.
No, they do. They actually just passed the philosophical exemption probably within the last 2 years.
Okay. Well, what about this? The kids that are in school, they act up. They send them down to the office to a counselor who recommends that immediately they have to be put on Ritalin, which is a class 2 narcotic, one molecule off from methamphetamine. It's a speed, and our Prozac. So for every kid they put on that, the federal government pays $850 to the school. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
So about every kid, 30% of the kids down here, mostly males, are on Ritalin or Prozac.
Yes.
So the schools can make money. Number two, the staff, that's where you're going to get it. It's in the hospital. That's the number one killer, basically, because it lives in staff in the hospital environment. And number three, the correlation between this mercury, can't even think of the additive now.
Thimerosal.
That another one is equal. There's a link between that and autism. There's one in 64 about 1970 in cases, and now it was one in 16 today. And FDA and the drug, the war on drugs should be in the schools, number one, but the drug enforcement people and the people they are supposed to look out for say they can't. They don't deny it, but they don't admit it.
Well, that's been the whole problem, hasn't it, Ben Sherry?
Yes, absolutely.
Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Welcome.
I'm Sandy. I'm calling from Juneau.
Hello, Sandy. Go ahead.
I hate to say victim because that's awfully negative, but I had polio in October of 52 before the actual vaccine was invented. Now, when I contracted it, I was in a very, very rural area of West Virginia, and there was no one around to give it to me, but I still contracted it. Now, about 30 years ago, there was a sect of some kind of religious people of some sort who were in Montana, I believe, and they didn't get any vaccinations. And they experienced, and they didn't send their kids to school or anything, and they experienced a polio outbreak as well. Why do you think that polio would be gone now, when there was no one to, you know, catch this from?
Well, gosh, that's kind of a convoluted question, but what you're talking about really is about paralysis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are probably anywhere from 12 to maybe 18 different types of Coxsackie viruses that are in the same class of viruses, the polio viruses, that can cause paralysis. And I did a big research project on that a couple of years ago and showed that people can have acute flaccid paralysis by other types of viruses, not just polio. And so there might be a little bit of that going on there in your question.
Back in a moment on Coast to Coast.
The official website of Coast to Coast AM is www.coasttocoastam.com. Log on now.
Years now, where they gone? 20 years, I don't know. I sit and I wonder sometimes where they've gone.
Call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, the year 2029, supposed to be an asteroid coming pretty close to the planet. Tomorrow, our guest on Coast to Coast will be asteroid researcher Daniel Derda. As a matter of fact, he was my very first interview on Coast to Coast about 4 years ago, so maybe it's like an anniversary thing. Derda will be back, but we're going to talk to him on our next Coast to Coast program about all of that. If you have not become a member yet of the Filament Book Club, chances are then you don't have that free electronic book that they're giving out to people. They've got a couple thousand left, and then that is it. Call 1-888-95-EBOOK, 1-888-95-EBOOK. It's a small computer. You can download books right through your computer or right off the telephone when you become a member of the Filament Book Club. The ebook is free. The club you join, Filament, bookclub.com, or 1-888-95-EBOOK. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Sherry, have you ever had anybody from a pharmaceutical company call you and say, what are you trying to do to us?
No, but that would be an interesting conversation.
Sure would be. What would you tell them? What are you trying to do to us, Sherry? Trying to put us out of business? What would you say?
I guess I would probably just say, no, I'm just, you know, it's like Paul Harvey. It's page two, the rest of the story. You know, it's like, why don't you tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
Yeah, really, under oath. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there. Hello? Hello?
Just me?
Yep, go ahead, sir.
Hey, this is George. This is Sherry. This is Gary from Florence, Mississippi.
Hey, hello, Gary. Go ahead.
I have a quick question about a hepatitis B vaccine. I work delivering health department supplies and vaccines and all their medicines and stuff. And we also pick up their diagnostic samples coming back to Jackson, Mississippi for testing the next day. And we also deal with a renal care group, which is dialysis of kidney patients. Mm-hmm. And we deal with a lot of blood, urine samples, and whatnot. We do wear gloves and stuff. But last year, my company had offered to pay like half of our hepatitis B vaccine, and us pay the other half. Well, I didn't get it because I've been listening to Coast for 3 years now, and I don't like getting vaccines. I've never had a flu vaccine, never had the flu. And my question is, would it be a good idea to get the hepatitis B vaccine since I deal with all this?
Well, here's the scoop about questions like this, because this is an excellent question. It's a real-life situation. It's just you have to understand a little bit about the disease, and you have to understand about what the vaccine does. And it's actually that up to 60% of people who actually even got antibodies from the vaccine that they would call protective antibodies, that the pharmaceutical company would call that, are going to be gone within 6 to 7 years. I mean, they don't last. And I actually did some research into this because I thought, what if people wanted to refuse this? And OSHA, and if you go out to OSHA.gov, there is an actual exemption form on the OSHA website that you can fill out to say that I want to refuse the hepatitis B vaccine. I went a step farther and called three different states and said, now if I have an employee that has refused the vaccine and somewhere along the line they get a needle stick and they contract hepatitis B, would they still be entitled to workers' comp? And they thought that was the most bizarre question. They said, well, if they filed a needle stick injury, the answer is yes. I said, so what you're saying is that even that if they got the hepatitis B vaccine and they got a needle stick and got it, they could get workers' comp. If they refused the vaccine and they got the needle stick and got hepatitis B, they could still get workers' comp. So either way, they can still get hepatitis B. And the answer is yes. So, you know, I mean, I think in a lot of ways, vaccines sort of give us a false sense of security. And I think that happens even with our kids, that we feel like once we get them vaccinated, they're never going to get chicken pox or measles or they'll get like a milder case of it. But the truth of the matter is, if they get a mild case of it, they're still getting it. So I don't know that you would absolutely be protected even if you decided to get it.
Great. Gary, thanks for that phone call. The clock is ticking, so I'll try to grab as many as we can here. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yes, hello. This is Maria in Grants Pass, Oregon.
Hi, Maria.
Hi there. Hi, Sherry. I have a question. I had the usual vaccinations in the 60s, and then I also had hepatitis A, B, diphtheria, and before I went to India, I had cholera and tetanus. I was just too afraid to go there without it. And I've recently been diagnosed with heavy metal toxicity. Mm-hmm. In fact, the lead was so high that the doctor asked if I had ever worked in industry, which I haven't.
Wow.
And I know a lot of people with this problem, and I had done some reading, and it said that it could be caused partially by vaccinations. Since I've had quite a bit of vaccinations, I'm wondering, is oral chelation the best thing to do for that, or is there anything to do once you've been, you know, inundated with all of these vaccinations now?
There is a lot that you can do. I would strongly suggest you do it under the direction of an integrative medicine physician. Mm-hmm. Oral chelation can work. IV chelation can work. You can use some simple things like garlic and chlorella that helps to mobilize things a little bit. Mm-hmm. But you really do need to get the lead out. You really do. I mean, lead is very toxic, particularly to the bone marrow. Mm-hmm. And they think that sometimes it comes from the vaccines by immobilizing a type of enzyme called metallothionine. And once that's immobilized in your body, you start accumulating all sorts of other metals.
Mm-hmm. And so is oral chelation as effective as the IV?
It can be.
What about megadoses of vitamin C?
That can help immobilization, but it's not going to chelate really a lot.
No, okay. And also, I'm concerned because I wanted to do some volunteer work in a hospice, and I just wanted to know, do you think there's anything to be concerned about as far as what I might be exposed to? Or I'm not going to get any more vaccinations before, but
In hospice? I wouldn't
think so. In a hospice
or
a hospital, yeah.
I wouldn't think so.
No, okay. All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. Appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. It's your turn. Hi.
Hi, George.
Welcome.
And Dr. Tenpenny. This is Cara calling from Waterville, Ohio. I had a quick comment and a question.
Sure.
My mother was very antibiotic when I was growing up, and I've noticed that, and I do the same thing with my son in that we get sick, I would say 10 times less than anyone, including my husband, whose mother believed blah, blah, blah. But my main question is, has Dr. Tenpenny seen any type of correlation between the vaccines distributed during the 40s and the 50s and the cases of lymphoma cancers that have started to surface and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and things like that?
There is a correlation between non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and the oral polio vaccine. And the connection is the contaminant of SV40, and there's a really wonderful book that you can read about that. It's called The Virus in the Back Vaccine. It gives the first 10 chapters is the historical backdrop of the development of the polio vaccine. The second 10 chapters is about Dr. Michael Carbone and his investigation and running up against the CDC and the NIH about the SV40 virus. It's called The Virus in the Vaccine by Debbie Bookchin. Bookchin, just like it sounds.
Very good. Thank you very much.
You've actually
validated a lot of what I've thought for a long time.
Read the book. It reads like a thriller, but it's really good. It's a really good investigative report.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, too. Let's go next to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. This is Joni from Palmetto Bay, Florida.
Okay, Joni.
I'm only 6 months older than you, and I spent my childhood years on Key Biscayne, Florida.
Yeah.
And I now have, I think I got the oral polio vaccine because I don't have a mark on me. I just don't remember, though. But my next-door neighbor lived there, too, at the same time, although I didn't know her, and also my cousin. We all went to the same elementary school there. And now I have chronic fatigue syndrome. I have lymphopenia and Hashimoto's thyroiditis. My next-door neighbor has a very bad MS, and my cousin has very bad Parkinson's. And I'm wondering if this could be more than a coincidence.
Sure.
You can elaborate on that?
These are all relatives of yours, so there's like a genetic predisposition.
My neighbor is not a relative.
Oh, I didn't. I thought you said a cousin or something.
Yeah, my cousin was there too, and my next door neighbor.
So you're wondering more about the Florida area?
I guess I'm wondering if maybe all of the vaccines or maybe the type of vaccines. I don't know. It's just peculiar that we all have serious immune problems, I think.
Well, keep in mind that that's one of the things that the conventional medical literature points out is the immune system disruption that happens from these vaccines and the very complexities that go on there. I'm sure that could play a role, but gosh, there's a whole bunch more to that in terms of environmental exposures and things like that. I really, without spending another 20 minutes talking to you about it, I don't know that I can answer your question fully.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, and could you elaborate a little bit? Did you say that the oral polio vaccine was more dangerous than the injection?
Yes.
Sorry if I'm making you repeat yourself.
No, that's fine, yeah. The oral polio vaccine caused more problems because it can be passed. The virus is a live virus vaccine. The injectable polio virus is attenuated. The live virus vaccine could pass through the intestinal tract and infect other people.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Great show tonight.
All right. Thanks for being part of the program. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You are on Coast to Coast. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi, sir. This is Mark.
Hey, Mark. Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm calling you from the night shift here in Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm a police officer.
Okay, sir. Go ahead.
Dr. Tenpenny, I get your emails. I have for 3 years. I first heard you back on George's show 3 years ago.
Oh, great.
My daughter is vaccine injured. We're a patient of Dr. Bradstreet and Carson Hall's.
Okay.
I met Dr. Wakefield numerous times. George, I talked to you last time with Mark Curry.
Yes.
And Mark Curry knows Andrew Wakefield and has had to experience some of the same unfortunate backlashes that Mark has had to deal with. So the thing, Dr. Tenpenny, thank you for putting the information out there. I just feel parents should be able to make an informed decision, and they should be given all the facts and circumstances and allowed to, you know, proceed with an educated decision. And my son, he started having bad reactions to the Hib at 2 months, and I stopped vaccinating him. So we are watching him. I'm giving him vitamins, supplements. I utilize some other products with him, and he is healthy as a horse. He's 4 years old, and he's normal. So I guess my thing of it is just two quick things for you. I'm treating my daughter now with a hyperbaric chamber, and I'm seeing great results. I don't know if you have any information on that. I'm now surfing the web and doing a lot of research on that, what they've done with patients in vegetative states, patients with strokes. The second thing of it is my son is, you know, I would buy the genetic argument except for the fact that my son's not autistic. So if it's more likely in boys, it's more likely in siblings. He's not showing it. Have you ever seen a person with autism or know of a person with autism that wasn't vaccinated?
The first thing about the hyperbaric oxygen thing, go to our website, that novaccines.com website. Send me an email so I can get your email, and I can send you a ton of links on that.
Great.
Okay, with treating children with this. It's not just with adults. I'm on a pretty active list with that.
Good.
So go to the novaccines.com and send me an email. The other thing about did you say about the genetics tendency?
Yes, ma'am. And
I think you said to have I ever seen an autistic child that wasn't vaccinated?
Right.
I know of a couple. I do, and okay. that they really, but this the one that was that I can think of right off that was not vaccinated is a mercury toxic child from the mother's breast milk.
Right, or
and we've been chelating her, and she's been getting a lot better.
I learned of the Rogam shot, and if you're Rh negative,
right,
how you can be exposed to more toxicity in utero.
Absolutely.
So I've just learned so much, and I just want to thank you and George.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. You're welcome. You're very welcome.
I listen to you religiously every night, and I learn something every week, George. And I just thank you and Art so much.
Okay, you take care of yourself.
Please have a good night.
All right, you too. Watching over us in Indianapolis.
You know, George, it's so funny because people will stop me and go, gee, Dr. Tenpenny, what can you tell me about vaccines? And I always have to giggle because I say, you know, I used to teach a 2-day, 16-hour course on this. So even though we've covered a lot of territory, I feel like we've barely glossed across the top of the surface of it,
That's
actually.
That's true. Interesting last name, by the way. What is that? Is that English?
Tenpenny? No, actually, it was German. It was Zainfinnick. Zainfinnick, which is Tenpenny in German. My grandfather changed it.
Tenpenny.
Mm-hmm.
Every name has a meaning. What does Tenpenny mean?
I don't know. I believe it ten has pennies. Something to do with the Tenpenny nail. I think my ancestors were carpenters.
You know what? You may be right. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Joe. I'm calling from WMAL Country in
Washington,
D.C.
Hi, Joe.
Hi. Dr. Tenpenny, about 5 years ago, I got a tetanus shot, and within a week, I had this extreme fatigue, and I have not been able to shake it. My question is, what can I do? Here I am 5 years down the road. Is there anything I can do to try to shake this out of my system?
Yeah, there is. We do a lot of treatment with vaccine-injured patients, and so I would suggest that you try to find an integrative medicine doctor in your area, maybe someone who's a member of the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, because they've had a lot of training in treating in using detoxification for either heavy metals or using homeopathics to detox the long-term effects that have happened from vaccines. The American Academy of Environmental Medicine, those doctors, I'm on the board of that group, and I've taught them a lot. I've done a lot of educating to them, and I'm sure that you're going to find somebody in your area that can help you with that.
Okay, and do you have anybody on your website that, you know, that you recommend in this area?
Where are you?
I'm in Washington,
Washington,
D.C.
You know, right off the top of we don't have a practitioner locator, but I do have a list of doctors in the office. So if you go out to that novaccines.com website, send me an email and tell me where you are, I can look it up on our spreadsheet and see who we have that might be in your area.
Great. Thank you so much. Great show, guys.
All right. Thank
You're
you,
welcome.
Too. Sherry, the clock is ticking. Tell us a little bit about the two DVDs.
Oh, okay. Well, the one DVD is called The Vaccines with the CDC and Science Documents Reveal. It's about a two-hour view of all of the research that goes through much of the things that we talked about tonight in much greater detail and picks apart the four premises of the vaccine industry. One, that vaccines eliminated diseases. Number two, that they're safe and effective. Number three, that their effects are long-lasting. And number four, that it's the only way to prevent epidemics. And I use all of the CDC's material to sort of poke holes in those premises. The other DVD is called Vaccines, the Risk, Benefits, and Choices. It's a three-hour DVD. There is only about a 10% overlap of the material on either one of those, and the overlap is really the background on the smallpox and the polio vaccines, because that does lay the groundwork. The three-hour DVD goes through each and every vaccine that we've talked about, all the childhood vaccines, the meningitis vaccine, the flu vaccine, and gives all the material that shows the connection between some of the illnesses and uses all conventional medical literature documentation to show that they're not all that they're cracked up to be.
Very good. Sherry, thanks so much. We'll be in touch. You know, anytime anything pops that might be newsworthy, I'll get you back on, okay?
Okay, George, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
You too. That's Dr. Sherry Tinpenny. Couple websites, novaccines.com and osteomed.com. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, and Art Bell, I'm George Norris. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone. Thank you.